It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be here today. Well, welcome to today's episode of the Coaching Perspective. Our topic for today is water management, not a dry subject. Anybody know anything about having problems with water? Anybody in California heard something about a drought?
I heard something the other day about it. I'm not sure. About $500 penalties if you overwater your lawn. I heard that's coming.
Well, we're going to give you some more information on it. We've got with us in the studio today Steve Hoyle, president of Water Concern Limited. And Steve's going to talk to us about the preservation and management of our water resources and how it's changed the face of the landscape industry from green to blue. You'll learn how technology and innovative design practices continue to improve this multi-billion dollar market. And he's also going to share some tips you can use for your own home or, hey, your next master plan community, whichever comes first. So welcome to the studio today, Steve.
I was glad to be here, Doug.
Well, it's glad to have you here. I'll just share with the audience. Steve and I have known each other a long time. I've really enjoyed working with him and his company, and they are here in Southern California that I know of, maybe a broader area, but in Southern California, they are the premier firm when you come to getting to help with your landscape irrigation issues. So we're really glad to have you here and address this, what's becoming a very critical problem.
Yeah, it is becoming a critical problem, especially in the last 6 months or so with the lack of rain that we've had during the rainy season. They consider that, you know, October to June is that season, and much of Southern California has only received, you know, less than half of that rainfall. So it's put a lot of the state actually is now into a stage two drought alert, as many people know, and that usually means that they institute penalties for violating some of the things that they're trying to do to conserve our resources during this drought time. And what happens after the state does that, a lot of the districts and cities and water departments then can either enact their own resolutions or restrictions or new ordinances to control or help during the drought season. Or if they don't take that step, then you're basically adopt what the state came up with. So.
Well, we're gonna hear more about that throughout the whole show here, I'm sure, and I'm sure it's on our audience's mind. But hey, before we get to that, tell our audience a little bit about what you did before Water Concern.
Well, actually, it goes back. It's kind of an interesting story. But I was going to UC Irvine to be a mechanical engineer. Really was fascinated by that subject. And while I was going to college, I was earning money to pay for school, and I was working at a landscape architecture firm. I was only 17 years old, and I was doing odd jobs, blueprinting, doing some errands, a little bit of drawing here or there. And although I planned to take a career in mechanical engineering, I really fell in love with the green industry. And it was a simple thing. I just loved the outdoors, loved the landscape spaces, outdoor environment. But I couldn't design something to save my life if I had to. So more of a left brain type of an engineering mind in a way. And so I really, although I went to Irvine for a couple years and got a lot of my undergrad done, I decided to take a leap of faith and transfer over and get into irrigation sciences. So I changed schools, went to Pomona, Cal Poly Pomona, and enrolled in irrigation science as a bachelor's degree. And the reason I did that is because irrigation is kind of like it's an in-between the creative side of landscape and architecture and outdoor with a little bit of, you know, innovation and technology, little left brain. And so I was able to use the things I enjoy to help supplement that green industry and try to fill that niche market.
You know, and one of the things that I think our audience is going to hear today is I've been guilty of, I sort of use landscaping and irrigation as interchangeable kind of words, and they're really two very different practices.
Yes, they are.
Very and contingent upon each other, but
absolutely.
Very different things. Well, good. So now tell us a little bit about Water Concern. What's the company? How many people?
We got
clients?
Eight people in the company right now, and we were located down in Rancho Santa Margarita. Been in business as a corporation since the year 2000, so we're finishing up a 14th year of business, and we made it through some tough times during the last slowdown, and we're really proud and that we were able to come up with some innovative business decisions in order to keep our business moving during some of those slow times. But a lot of what our company does is we do a lot of different things when it comes to irrigation. Some people say, what is that exactly? But if you were to look at some of the things that we do, one of the things, master planning is a big one. Okay, so if you're going to build, for example, large development, large community is going to go in. A lot of expansion and growth in Southern California right now, as you know, and the Irvine Company and Rancho Mission Viejo and some other large home builders, they build communities out of a piece of land. And in order to understand how are you going to irrigate and provide water to supplement the landscape, it takes a lot of master planning, meaning how much water is this community going to need? How big are the tanks need to be? How big is the piping infrastructure? How much grass can we have? And it's all that in hydraulics, and it's plant water use, and it is elevation, geography. It's so many different facets. My favorite part is master planning. And we've done that for a long time. We've done master planning for Ladera Ranch was one of our bigger projects, and we're working right now on the new ranch plan, which is a fascinating client and a fascinating project to work with. Coupled with master planning, you move into irrigation design services. And after you've done all that master planning and you know what you're going to do, where you're going to do it, it comes down to how are you going to design a system using technology, all the different tools, whether it's a sprinkler or a different type of valve or a sensing device or a control system. You put all those pieces together and you put together a plans and specs that get bid out and constructed to create an irrigation system that's going to minimize how much water we need, maximize efficiency, and sustain the environment that you're trying to plant. Following design services, there's a lot of construction administration. We are out there in the dirt with the contractors, solving problems, dealing with bid RFIs and requests for information and things like that during the construction period. Also, you make sure that you walk the systems that you design with the contractor, operate them, inspect them, make sure that they are put in per the plans and specs that you created so that the end product is exactly what you conceived while you were designing it. Following construction administration, another scope of service that we do is water management. That's a fascinating subject where an owner, for example, a homeowners association, a school district, or a community for that matter, will hire a consultant to come out and they will manage the irrigation. In other words, you take control of all the timers in their city, their school district, and you alter those or you control those timers so that they're applying the right amount of water when they need it based on the plant type and based on the environment that irrigation system is covering. And it's great because the results are right there in the water bill. A lot of clients that we've had will say, hey, I'm wasting water, I'm getting penalized in my water bill, I'm on a tiered rate water structure, and I can't get out of these penalty phases. And you go in there, analyze the system, take control of that system, and then you operate that. And the reward is at the end when you get things tuned and you get things retrofitted or renovated to put down an efficient amount of water, the results are in that bill. And you can save your clients a lot of money in terms of putting the right amount of water down, and the landscape actually responds positively as well.
Now, Steve, you've been in business 14 years doing this, and really this drought issue has really been a relatively, at least as serious as it is right now, a relatively recent thing. It's kind of got everybody focused on wasting water and being concerned about it. How has that really changed? Has it had a big impact on the way people look at your services and what you do?
I think in the last, I've been in the business 25 years total, but I think in that 25 years has been a lot of shift towards the green movement, the stewards of the land, and how we use our water resources. Number one, because I think the state of California has put more emphasis on that in terms of the ordinances they pass. They realize that there is a limited, finite amount of water that is available on a yearly basis for all of us. And if you have growth in the state of California, which means more people, more landscape, more environment that you need to supplement that irrigation during the year, you really need to put a lot more emphasis on that outreach of water management. And I think there's been a lot of public education and awareness of wasting water. It all comes down to even the psychology of wasting water. They're really trying to, you see the commercials on TV now. 20 years ago when we did landscape plans and we did irrigation drawings, there was very little what we had to really complete the plans. Now it's more, there's a lot more, there's a water allotments. You only get this much water for this much landscape area, and you have to make sure you meet those allotments, write reports, and there's a lot of things that make you responsible as a landscape architect or as an irrigation consultant that you are responsible and for not overextending what you were allocated for your water.
You know, I think the most ridiculous level of concern I've seen was this morning on one of the radio news programs I caught as I was going out the door, and they were talking about this charitable program that's going where you douse yourself or somebody douses you with a bucket of ice water.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And somebody was bringing up, well, in California, can you do that? I mean, with water conservation, should we be wasting a bucket of ice water on somebody's head?
Just do it over a dry area in the lawn and you'll be fine.
Okay, there we go.
There's always a solution somewhere.
Well, look, before we get into it, one of the questions that we've asked all of our guests that have ever been on the show is to tell us about a particular experience or that you've had, or what is sort of your guiding principle? What is the true north that you hold for being in business and working with people?
It's kind of an interesting question, and I thought about that for a little bit, and I went back in time to when I started doing irrigation consulting, and I just started my career. I was so young at this, and I was at a reception party for an office, and there was a lot of different people from the industry there, and I remember being fascinated with some of the key mentors that I felt that were in my industry that did irrigation consulting 40 years before I even started. And I always like to see what drove them and what the advice they had for the new upcoming. And I talked to a gentleman who was, he's a well-renowned irrigation consultant, and now he's actually a golf course architect. And I said, hey, can you give me some key advice, you know, for my future career? I want to be an I'm going to be an irrigation consultant. And he says, you know what? He said, your role in the industry as an irrigation consultant is not to be reactionary. That's the one mistake you got to avoid, and it's not the tail end of the train. And when it comes to services, because when you're an irrigation consultant, usually you're the last one to receive the project, because it has to be designed in so many facets before you actually apply irrigation to it. So a lot of people say irrigation is at the tail end of that green industry, the drawing train, and per se. But he goes, but your role has got to be proactive. So if you go into this business, have this mantra that you need to guide your services to be proactive, he told me that you'll need to guide your services in your career to lead the projects you work on in a direction that's responsible to using the water resources in a correct and responsible manner. So he says, don't react, be proactive. And so a lot of the way the office runs water concern is, our guiding principle is like landscape, and we look at landscape as a vital part of just the basic human ecology. You look at any downtown urban setting, there's always a green space, there's always a park. It's revered. It's a place to go play ball when you're a child. It's a place to go sit, relax. Landscape is vital to the human psyche, the spirit. And in order to create a responsible landscape that preserves water resources for future generations and growth is what I'm kind of committed to, or I am committed to that. And so my principle is to provide a service that integrates the irrigation and water resource management with a proactive strategy. So what does that mean in layman's terms is, I don't wait for a drawing or a set of plans to come and start a design. I like to get involved. Our office likes to get involved up front to make sure that what we're doing in terms of technology, the way the landscape palettes are created, meaning what types of plant materials, what types of turf, all those things are going to utilize water in the most efficient manner so that we do meet the ordinances, we do meet those codes, and we are conserving water so that there can be continued growth in our area and have enough water to sustain that growth. So a key example of how that would work is if we get a project and it's a brand new park, for example, or a business center or any type of a commercial setting, and the client says, this is what my vision is. My vision is I want grass along the parkways, because when you're driving down the street, I want to see the building. I want it to look clean. I want it to look crisp as you're looking into the architecture. and I want these types of trees, and the landscape architects has their vision for how they're going to soften the architecture. And then we come in and we say, all right, we understand all that vision. However, there's certain things we can do. If we do this with the turf, if we do these things, limit the grass to this functional area only, and let's change the plant palette to this, and when we'll supplement some different types of irrigation technology so that we can try to reach most of the owner's vision and the architect's vision, but we're also meeting the restrictions to make us all responsible for how we're using the water. So if you wait until the plans are done and then they say we need an irrigation design to irrigate this, you're a little too late. So we like to be more upfront and proactive and try to guide them through the process, so at the end of the day, we know that we're being the most responsible for that.
You know, I think we could take that that principle and we could apply it to almost any business. I mean, if we go through our business careers being reactive, we are going to have a much less of an impact than if we start to get proactive and think about how can we help at the front end.
Right.
Rather than just fixing the problems at the back end.
True.
And that's what I hear you saying. The other thing that I'm really picking up here is, again, I tend to think of irrigation as, you know, that thing that those pipes that go underneath the sod, that's what you do. You decide where the sprinkler heads should be and how many pipes should go there. But you're talking way beyond that. You're talking about deciding really on a community level how much green area, how much open space, how much water management. Does this get irrigated? Does it not get irrigated? And what kind of water are you using? And going way beyond what the average person on the street tends to think of as irrigation.
That's true. I mean, irrigation consultants these days around the country have become masters of many trades. They have to understand a lot of different things, including technologies, landscapes, soils, engineering. A lot of different facets are involved, and you kind of pull all those pieces together to put together the system. The pipes and the sprinkler heads is probably the last 2% of the project. And it's most people think that that's what you do, but it's much broader in depth than that, and that's what fascinates us at our office, and we like to get into that deep depth of what it encompasses.
You know, I was sharing with Steve before the show that just on a personal level, I had a neighbor down the street that had a turfed area, and we do not have big yards in on our street, but they had a turfed area that was very well maintained and some shrubbery in there too, and they recently took it all out, and the next thing I saw was they had a couple of big rocks hauled in and they placed them. That looked kind of nice. And then after that, all of a sudden, they've got these large raised redwood planter boxes. And they're putting some kind of probably edible garden going into these planters. The whole thing is looking really kind of cool.
Yeah, that's a new...
Really kind of cool.
There's a big trend right now is the edible urban gardens. Seeing it pop up everywhere. I've seen magazines with articles. I've been to some keynote workshops with landscape and irrigation, and we actually involved in one that we do every 2 months, and there's actually a lady that comes in and talks about edible gardens, and it's the most fascinating part of the show. I mean, she steals the show every time because she gets people excited about, you know, edible gardens. They use your landscape for something that's more than just looking at it. You can actually produce something. You can eat that. You can share it with your neighbors. You can bring, it's a social aspect to it. And not only that, but most edible gardens are irrigated with a drip type irrigation because the leaves don't like to get wet. And drip irrigation is much more efficient than sprinkler or spray irrigation. So therefore you are conserving water while you are producing something that is edible and productive with your landscape. And it does, edible gardens is really taking off. And the new community that we're working on right now in Rancho Mission Viejo, Sendero, and the future planting areas out there, they've got whole co-op farms that they're building into the landscape. Instead of large turf areas where kids will play, they'll actually plant a garden. There's a little barn there, and they actually have volunteers come down, and they grow crops. They have a full-time staff person there that sells this produce to the community back. And it's great. It's a great use of space. Huh. You know,
so the ultimate extension of really being concerned about irrigation is maybe to question right from the beginning, should we irrigate?
Right.
Is there another way to achieve the the open space and the peace that goes with it and the calmness that we sort of associate with park-like. Can you do that without a heavily irrigated area?
Yes, technically you can do that. However, I think it's a fine balance. I think you have to balance landscapes and integrate them into a large community type setting where you have non-irrigated spaces that are naturalized, and you can integrate those into a space and create spaces that do need some supplemental water during the year, and you kind of balance that out and you integrate it into a landscape that is permanently irrigated in order to give you that space that it's a call it responsible landscaping. You know, it's like you don't have to irrigate 100% of the area, but if we take the area and we zone it into non-irrigated zones, partially irrigated zones, and then you weave in some permanently irrigated zones, you create a responsible environment that minimizes the amount of water but also maximizes the beauty that the public is kind of used to seeing. So we're seeing a lot of that transition now in the newer developments where they are hybridizing the landscape into more of a natural setting as you move away from the development into the natural surroundings.
I like that idea of balance, you know, because I mean, when people talk about conserving water, I mean, the thing that goes through my mind is some of the horrible old communities, the 50s communities out in Palm Springs that are rock gardens out in front, and some of the stuff I've seen in Arizona that they have no landscaping whatsoever and they're just rocks, and it's like, I couldn't live that way. You know, right. that is depressing.
Right. You know? I mean, we just finished a park down in San Juan Capistrano. It's a Riata. It's called Riata Park, and it was a collaboration between some native plant, Open Space Foundation, native plant growers, landscape architect, and Rancho Mission Viejo was heavily involved in the creation of this. It's a demonstration garden using native plants. And we worked with, we provided an irrigation system for these because they do need a little bit of water once in a while. So we created this really great efficient system with lots of controls and lots of flexibility in how that irrigation system works. And working with the plant expert that was out there, Tree of Life Nursery was involved in that. And Mike Evans is the owner of Tree of Life. And I worked side by side with him, and we created this irrigation system to sustain his vision for this garden that would showcase native species to the public and trying to encourage people to embrace those. And I learned a lot about natives and how they are different from your classic landscape species that you see throughout, like Mediterranean type plant palettes. And it's all about how you plant them, it's about when you water them, and we have the most sophisticated irrigation schedule for that, where we're only watering some of those plants in the heat of the summer in July once every 19 days, once every 27 days.
Wow.
So we have very unique irrigation programs that only give them water once a month. And so it's great to see that showcase for the public to come in and see some of these great landscapes, and maybe they can take away a few key things and embrace that and put it in their own homes or in their own landscape palettes in order to really do what we can to utilize those natives and reduce the amount of water that we're going to be required to sustain it.
Cool. Good. Okay. Well, look, let's take a break for commercial, and then we will be right back here. And okay, and we're back, and we're talking today in studio with Steve Hoyle, president of Water Concern Limited, and we're talking about irrigation, drought, and what's going on. And hey, this has been a fascinating conversation. I have to apologize to Steve. The audience probably doesn't know it, but we kind of worked out what we were going to talk about ahead of time, and I haven't stuck to it at all. He just got me totally sidetracked with how interesting this stuff is. So we'll try to hit some of the questions that you prepared for. Well, look, one of the things, irrigation, landscaping standards, obviously have changed a lot.
Yes, they have.
In the last 10 or so years.
Well, you know, like I said before, you know, 20 years ago, you know, you could do a landscape design as an architect and put an irrigation system in, and there wasn't a whole lot that you had to really conform to. But, you know, back in the 90s, there was a law passed by the state that restricted how much water you could use within a certain, you know, they gave you what they called an allotment. So the larger the landscape area you had for your project, the larger amount of allotment that you had. That ran for about 10 years or so, and then they changed that. In 2010, there was a new law that was passed when Schwarzenegger was governor, and they actually reduced that allotment by 12%. And this new ordinance that came out set a lot of new things that throughout the state, the entire state of California, that emphasize more restrictive use of water, more responsible use of water. It goes well beyond irrigation. It goes down to landscape pallets, making sure that you're using the proper type of planting, the soil amendments. You're creating not only an irrigation design, but also a management plan that goes along with that. So you have to put in your specifications how you're going to water this for long term, how you're going to maintain the irrigation system, the plants. A lot of guidelines that you have to put on there. There's a lot of paperwork involved that has changed our industry quite a bit. That's the biggest thing when it comes down to the ordinances and how we do irrigation plans. The biggest thing that I like the most is the technology part of it. You know, you have, you think back to the first rainbird head, as if you want to pick that as an example of, you know, many, many, many years ago, big brass impacts that were developed for the agricultural industry. And now you look at the technology that goes into creating a simple sprinkler head, down to how efficient it applies the water to the soil. I mean, how valves work, how control timers have really taken a huge leap in technology, where they're now, instead of just programming, hey, I want to water odd days and 5 minutes a day, and I'm going to water my grass and my shrubs and this and all on the same program. Now it's all weather based, where they call them smart timers and for short. And these timers, if you can get them at any wholesale store or even at your local hardware store, you can pick those up and you install those, and it learns, or it asks you some key questions about, you know, where are you, what zip code do you live in, and you put a sensor and you attach it to the rain gutter on your roof, and you program in a program for your sprinklers, and instead of you putting in minutes, it asks you questions. What kind of sprinkler do you have? What kind of shrub do you have? Is it a drought tolerant shrub? Is it a cool season, like a marathon or a medallion type sod, or is it a Bermuda grass? It asks you some key questions. It asks you, hey, is it in the sun all day, or is it in the shade part day? You put in some of those things and it'll actually create a program for you, and it actually adjusts that program daily basis, that will modify its program based on how hot it was, how humid it was, the time of day, the sunlight hours, all those things. So it actually adjusts your irrigation every single day in order to put the right amount of water down based on the local weather that you have at your home or within your zip code. That's an extreme example of a smart timer. There's simpler ones. There's way much more complex type controls that are out there, even when it comes to a commercial level. It's all cloud-based these days. You can actually have your control time software on your PDA or your iPhone, and you can control your 200 timers within your school district or your city, and it's all based on a weather station, and it's based on cloud, a lot of cloud-based technologies.
Is that a pun that it's cloud-based there? I mean, the cloud,
yeah, it is.
Cloudy, we don't have to.
that is good. You know, another thing that's interesting about technology that's come to the surface a lot is water collection, actually, water catchment and water reuse. So instead of just being an irrigation consultant and plug it into a water meter or plug it into a pipe, you actually can create your own water resources by capturing water, whether it's rainfall water, air conditioning condensate. We did a study for a chain of food stores where they said, hey, you know what? You know how big the sewer line has to be for our refrigeration units in our stores? And it's all the condensation water that drips off of the coils goes right to the sewer. But if we were to take that water, it's pretty clean. Take it, capture it, put it into a tank under the parking lot. How much landscape can, how much water will that save us? And we did a study, and it was in the desert. And the study showed that they could actually sustain their landscape and the entire strip mall that was attached to their parking lot area and their store all year round.
Wow.
Without using a drop of water off of the city main. And so water resource and collection, when it does not rain here very often, we get 12, 14 inches of water a year annually. But we're seeing a lot that stormwater collection has influenced how water is captured and used in irrigation. More than using the resources for irrigation, it's more of a mitigation for stormwater collection. So instead of letting all the water come off of a parking lot or your project and go straight out to the storm drain into the ocean, we're protecting that ocean environment. We need to hold that water for a while. Or if you can divert it from going into the ocean, let's hold it in a tank. And after a few days after it's rained, let's filter let's clean that water and let's apply it to the landscape instead of using the water off the city.
You know, I'm only sorry that we're doing this on radio, not television, because if the audience could see how excited Steve gets about this, I think any minute he's going to break out into a rain dance here. This is so cool. What's being done on a community level to help, and then what can we do personally?
I think on a community level, what we've seen being done the most is controls. I think that is a big one. Like I said about technology and how the control, meaning your irrigation timer, if you want to say it in layman's terms, have really advanced much beyond what people would have thought 20 years ago, especially with these weather-based timers. I think controls is definitely done. In fact, when you do a new landscape irrigation project anywhere in the state of California, and it's over a certain size, I think it's 2,500 square foot of landscape, you have to install one of these weather-based timers. It's the law.
Oh, okay.
That has done a lot to help manage water on a control level. I think there's also a mantra of garbage in and garbage out. You're seeing a lot more maintenance companies take irrigation very, very seriously, to where you can have a great control system and you can change your irrigation time, run it on a smart timer, weather-based, all those things. But if you've got an irrigation system that's not tuned, it's not checked, you're checking for broken parts or a geyser, or is the sprinkler turned the wrong way, is it need to be adjusted, pressures adjusted, those things, it's not really that functional, because you're using a very high dollar piece of equipment to control a system that's not really that well functioned and well maintained. So I'm seeing a lot done on the maintenance side, where they have irrigation divisions within their companies that actually go out and tune these and check these and audit their own systems to make sure that it's not garbage in, garbage out. It's actually a functional system that is tuned to the level that it's being controlled.
So what's the tip for the homeowner right here? I want to get a few tips in for the homeowner, because, you know, as you're talking about this, I'm thinking, and I shouldn't even say this on the air, but the other night I was getting ready to go to bed, and I've got our sprinklers set up. They're on a timer, not a smart station. They're just, you know, so many days, so many hours, certain time. They go on in the evening, so it's not the sunny time of the day, less evaporation, but I never see them. So, of course, I'm not monitoring whether they're working. So I'm looking out the window. The sprinklers have just gone on. I'm looking at this sheet flow of water down the driveway.
Right.
Obviously, I've got something wrong, you know, which who knows how long it's been wrong, because I don't go out there and check it on a regular basis. So
right.
What can the homeowner do to help with this issue?
There's some real basic things you can do to control water, your water use in your yard. Number one, like I said before, smart control. If you go to a website called bewaterwise.com, it's a website that'll link you. And there's also, you could go to your local water department's website or your city. There are rebates out there that will supplement the cost of a new smart timer for your home. So if you want to upgrade to, I call it level 201 water management to your home, you can purchase this controller, get rebates involved with that, and then it will help you alter your irrigation program based on the weather. So now, instead of you watering the same amount of time all year long, or if you only adjust your timer once or twice a year, which is normal.
Yeah, that's what I do. Summer or winter.
Let's do it every day.
Yeah.
So yesterday we had a really hot, or it was not that hot, it was cool and it was humid. We had some rainfall. It was the temperatures. I mean, the amount of water that was needed yesterday might have been a third less than what we might need today. So if your timer is actually adjusting that application of water on a daily basis, you would have saved some water yesterday and over what would be an average system. The second thing that I think is important, and this is also involving rebates, is removing turf. Turf is one of the largest water users. Turf is a very vital part of our landscape, and I admire and I use, we don't knock turf. However, using turf in functional spaces is very critical and it's very important. And when we come into a project, we usually try to guide the landscape architect to, when they create a space of turf, it needs to be large enough to be functional. What's functional mean? Or can you throw a ball on it, or can you lay a blanket down and use it for something that it's used, what its purpose is for? If it's a 6-foot by 3-foot piece of turf because it just looks good there, it needs to be functional, because you take away that part of the landscape, and even if you have large turf areas, if you break them up, take half the turf out, take 2/3 of the, take it all out if you really want to, and replace it with some type of a planting that uses less water. And when you take out turf and you put in a shrub type system or a ground cover using lower water, it's a lot easier to irrigate with drip irrigation, for example. Easier to irrigate shrubs and ground covers with drip irrigation than it is turf. Even though that is possible, what you're asking me about residential tips here. Number three thing is efficient sprinklers. Everybody's probably got a Champion, a Rainbird, a Toro, Hunter. There's all types of Orbit. There's all types of different sprinkler varieties out there. There are efficient sprinklers that have really improved in technology that apply water very efficiently. Those are on those same websites. You can find them on every water district, water department, city, bewaterwise.com. You can find those sprinkler types and you can retrofit your yard using those, and you can save, some of these sprinkler systems can save 25-20% of your water use just by changing the device that broadcasts that water. It does it much more efficiently than of years ago. I did say drip irrigation. Drip irrigation on a whole is probably about 25-30% more efficient than a spray system, just because it applies water very slowly, right on the ground. It's not broadcasting it through the air, and it applies the water right to the soil, and that's what creates that efficiency factor. There's lots of different systems that you can use for converting your sprinklers over to a drip system. One of the key things that you do need to do when you're doing drip irrigation is you need to filter the water after your control valve, and you need to make sure you reduce the pressure, because drip systems need to be clean water, meaning the filter, and they use very little pressure. So if you overpressurize a drip irrigation system, it tends to not last as long and doesn't function correctly. I also encourage people to check their irrigation on a weekly basis. On a Saturday, go out there, if it's in the evening, run your irrigation timer through a 1-minute test program, making sure all your heads are in operation, they're not broken, or they're spraying the right direction, or there's something not clogged. And that'll help keep some of the browned out areas, or keep your coverage correct. And it keeps you in tune with your system. It's pretty simple to do. And I always say that people tend to set their irrigation timer and they set it and forget it. But I think if you took the attitude that you need to treat your control timer like a thermostat in your house, you go up to that thermostat, I bet right now you're going up there once a day making sure, is that thing set to 82, 80, whatever it is, because, hey, that's the cost of running the AC, right? Yeah. Well, think about, if you think of your control timer the same way, hey, just go out there once a week and say, hey, do I need to adjust it up and down? Is it cooling down? You know, it's amazing how much water is wasted, mostly in the fall, because people feel like it's hot out and the temperature is high, and you maybe have some Santa Ana conditions once in a while. However, the key factor is the daylight hours are shrinking almost a minute a day. So every month you got a half an hour less sunlight, which means the plants, that's what controls the most amount of water use in a plant, is the sunlight, direct sunlight. So as the days get shorter, starting on summer solstice in June, even July, August, September, October, that's where you see traditionally a lot of water waste. So if you go out in the timer once a month, even, and you adjust that down as your fall months come into place, then you can really control some of that water waste. And then one of the other ones is applying your irrigation with repeat cycles. And a lot of, what is that? So you run your sprinklers, like you said, 10 minutes a day, or 10 minutes or even 8 minutes on one burst. And you said you go out to your yard and you see the water running down the sidewalk. What you can do to try to mitigate that is break this irrigation into two cycles of 4 minutes instead of one cycle of 8 minutes. Everybody's timer has multiple cycle start times. So instead of having it come on at 6 a.m. or 5 a.m., have it come on at 3 a.m., water for 4 minutes, let it sit for 2 hours, and then come back at 5 a.m. and put another 4 minutes down. And what that does is it allows the soil to absorb the 4 minutes of water, let it rest, let it percolate down, and then get itself prepared to take another 4 minutes of irrigation, and you maximize the water actually infiltrating the soil. Because once the soil gets a little bit saturated, it tends to sheet flow off, and that's what causes runoff. And water departments, they consider runoff, that's a detrimental, it's more detrimental than actually overwatering your yard, because that is visible waste going down the gutter into the storm drain and out to the ocean. And it's what people see. And so overwatering is not as viewed as bad as runoff. So repeat cycles is a simple thing to do. Just break your program in half and just put two cycles on. and you'll do a tremendous amount of savings on your less runoff. And in fact, if you're running your sprinklers for 10 minutes and you do two cycles, I usually tell people to take a minute off, because now you're not wasting 2 minutes of water down the street. You actually need less water because you're actually put it in the right place.
Whatever you were using before, reduce it by a minute and split it into two cycles.
Yeah. Play with it. See what you get. And another, the last thing is just take advantage of the rebates. There's a lot of funding available through, you know, a lot of their water departments, districts, metropolitan, state, even local water districts. I know my district is offering rebates, turf removal. They'll pay $2 a square foot to take out grass. And in some places, I know up in Glendora right now, $4 a square foot to remove grass. And there's conditions that, you know, the plants and the things that you use to replace the plant materials you purchase in Glendora, they're trying to support their own economy. But the city is supplementing $2 on top of the $2 from the state to take grass out. And that's how it's serious it is getting. And this drought, we've had a few of these over the last couple of decades, but this one is hopefully is going to end this year. That's what we can all hope for. But what I tell everybody is that California is always in a drought. It always has been in a drought, and it always will be in a drought. And we need to always consider that when we are, whether you're designing a landscape or you're designing an irrigation system or you're maintaining your yard, or you're talking about water, just drought's never going to be over. Let's just treat it like it's always there. It's just right now, this one's just a little more severe and a little more extended than we want it to be, or, you know, have the resources for. So
tell me, rank for me from a green perspective, being a person that is sensitive about what's green. How does water management, irrigation, stack up against things like solar energy and insulated windows and fewer windows in the design of our houses? You know, we've got all these other things that are going on. And frankly, my impression is that water management irrigation gets the short end of attention span here.
Yeah, it seems like it might, but actually there's lots of opportunities. For example, when you do a project, there's a program called LEED, and it takes advantage of energy efficiencies such as the solar and the rainwater catchments and all those things. Irrigation has a place there in that program where you can achieve points for these LEED type projects, silver LEED, gold LEED, platinum LEED, where the more you do to reduce your water footprint, the more points you can get. That's a big deal, and I think irrigation and the water in the landscape is actually, it's really ramped up in terms of its the focus and its visibility within the environment and the development portions of our business.
Okay, let's step back for a minute. I mean, this is fascinating stuff. This is really great. One of the things that we try to do on the program is get a sense of some business principles. You know, now you're running a company. You aren't a huge company. If I remember right, you've got 8 people right now. What makes your company a good place to work?
Well, I think one of the things that I like about the company is that we take innovation to heart. There's great people that work at our firm. A lot of the people that are at our firm are highly educated in irrigation science background. They love the technology side of things, where you come in and you see some new gadget or new program or new technology that we can apply towards irrigation. They take that to heart, and they mold it, use it as a tool to create a system that's going to work for our clients. Some of the other things that is great about it, it is a small firm, you know. We just have a lot of flexibility working there. You know, I don't have an 8-to-5. You come in 8-to-5 and strict rules on that. You know, everybody there is responsible where they come in, and they put in their time, and where a lot of our stuff is deadline-driven. So sometimes people will come in and they'll stay late, and then we'll finish a project, and there's a little flexibility within the company to allow you to have that free time that you need as a person and as an employer. That's something that I take pretty seriously, is making sure people are balanced and that they are using their time wisely at the office as well as at home too.
So in terms of I don't know if this is even a good question for you, Steve, because you know, so many of the firms are finding that they're having trouble hiring people these days. Now, I don't know if you've been out looking lately, but maybe just from your industry perspective.
Right.
What's the market like? Are there people available, or are we looking at a shortage of trained people in the irrigation area?
What I've seen is that, you know, this last recession that we had was pretty severe, where there was a lot of great people that had a lot of, I call them, they were trade smart. They knew their trade very well. And when the market went down, a lot of those people that were good at that trade left the market. And so it created kind of a vacuum. When the market picked back up again, there was a vacuum there. And it was a big challenge to try to fill that with people that were qualified that would be able to do a good job. And with our company, it's not easy to find an irrigation consultant or an irrigation designer employee for your firm. Not only, you've got a lot of competitors out there that are looking at the same time you do, and we're all friendly about it. We go, where are you finding people these days? You know, but we've been very fortunate where we have expanded our business in the last couple years, and we've got great people that have been put on our staff that, and sometimes you can't just find someone that knows irrigation principles and then they also know how to put together a set of drawings and they know how to do, you know, use CAD and they know how to work in the field. You kind of have to pick what's important to you and for your office, and then you have to take that and then also help train and get them in training programs and education and teach them as much as you can and mold them to something that's going to work for your office. And it's worked really well for us. We've had some great new employees that have worked with us, and we were fortunate that they fell into our office, and it have been working out really well. So,
but now you just wrapped up a year as president of your industry organization. Yeah. I don't have the name of it right.
American Society of Irrigation Consultants. Yeah, it was a 2-year presidency, but
2 years.
2 years.
But he says with a sigh of relief.
No, that was actually I've been on the board for a lot longer than that, but it was my turn as president for 2 years, and it's an international organization of irrigation consultants, and it's great. We see ourselves as independent irrigation consultants, meaning that we take water resource development and management to the point where we're not sided with one type of design or another type of design or one way of thinking. We put together the best tool and the best product for a project, and we implement those into our designs and execute that as an independent consultant. And that's what that word independent means. And we've got people in the industry from all over the country, and we usually have a conference. And in fact, we just came back from a conference up in Portland at the end of April, and everybody comes together for this large irrigation conference, and we have 2 full days of seminars on the latest technologies and the latest projects. And you know you're sitting there with somebody that does work in New York, and they're talking about some great project they did, or somebody did one of the projects down at the mall in Washington DC, and some of the things that they did for that to capture rainfall water and broadcast it and use it for irrigation. So it's a bunch of irrigation nerds all get together and have a good time. And the irrigation industry is full of really great people. And it's really good to be a part of that and being president of that organization, to see that our challenges for that was coming out of a recession where membership has its struggles, and people want to see what is the value in this membership. So as a president, you know, you had to try to work through and carry that organization, because it's just so important to make sure that people have a place to go to call an organization of their trade or their profession as, you know, irrigation consultants.
Okay. Well, look, as we get ready to wrap up here, is there anything else that you wanted to get across to the audience that we didn't cover, or that maybe I interrupted you on?
Not at all. I think we hit it very much in depth, and I appreciate the invitation to come and talk about what I do for a living and try to hopefully spread it, and maybe 2 or 3 people see, you know, just some plant the seed of irrigation is important, and it's not something that is dry. It's actually pretty interesting, and if you want to know more about it, there's plenty of information out there to grow the knowledge. So.
Can you just once again share with the audience that park that you mentioned sounds so fascinating? Where is that? How would they find it and see it?
It's called Reata Park, R-E-A-T-A, and it's down in San Juan. Basically, you take the 5 freeway and you head towards down the Ortega Highway, towards Elsinore. So you're going east on Ortega, and it's right before you get to Antonio Parkway. There's actually a stoplight there, Riata Road, and it's on the south side of the Ortega Highway. So it's just been finished, and they're really trying to expand that. But if you ever want to see a good collection of native plant materials and in a natural environment, it's a neat place. It's going to just continue to get more and more awareness, and as it grows, you know, this park's only a few months old, but it's going to become something spectacular, I think.
Great. And how do people get in touch with you?
Easiest way is waterconcern.com, all one word, and it's a website in creation, and it's infancy right now, but we're working on that. But it does have our vital information if they ever need to get in touch with us.
Okay, great. Well, Steve, thank you very much for being with us here today, and particularly bringing to light this serious problem we're having here in California with water right now. And even more important to me is sharing your passion about the business and the impact technology is having on your work. So welcome to the Coaching Perspective radio show community, and we'll look to have you back in the future and get an update. Hopefully, maybe someday when it's raining, you can come do a show.
That sounds good.
Great. Thanks a lot for being with us. And this is Doug Gefeller saying, we hope that what we covered today gave you some ideas about things that you can use and put to use immediately right now to help your business, or in this case, to help your home and your own situation. So thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.